Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Chris Hutton. Let's get into the first news of today, and as was expected, the ANC did in fact manage to pass the first part of the budget yesterday, the fiscal framework, which went through Parliament with 192 votes, I believe it was, 194, sorry, voting for the budget, and 182 voting against. So that being the ANC plus the IFP plus Action SA plus Rise Mzansi, UDM, PAC, Al Jamaha, Build One SA, Good, and the Patriotic Alliance all voted for the bill. Voting against the bill were the DA, MK, the EFF, ATM, and I think I'm forgetting maybe another tiny party, one of the very small ones. The ANC got its way, I suppose, and this suggests that the GNU is kind of on its way out. Yesterday, Ramaphosa seemed to suggest that the DA had, quote, defined itself out of the GNU. There's now a lot of talk from the DA that they are really angry about this and that the ANC is just completely unworkable with, that this thing is pretty much dead. There's talk from the ANC still that you can't possibly form part of our government if you don't support our budget. So a lot of unhappiness all around. And so far, it's not clear if another party such as the EFF or MK is actually going to join the Government of National Unity to replace the DA. Maybe it will, but so far the EFF has publicly rejected the advances made by the ANC. Now, we don't know for sure what's going to happen. And, you know, Malema has in the past revealed he's very malleable to changing his mind and his opinions and flip-flopping. But Chris, there are a number of issues, I think, that kind of need to be considered here. The very first one is, if the EFF doesn't join and the ANC tries to go ahead with what they've currently got, I think yesterday's vote tally shows us the difficulty. Despite the super important vote, the ANC managed 194 votes rather than their sort of maximum, which is just over 200, I think 201 or something like that. Now, the opposition also was missing members because there were no abstentions, 182. But the ANC and its partners often struggle to fill all the seats in Parliament. It's very possible that from time to time, and there are a number of budget votes still to come up over the course of the next couple of months, the ANC could lose any one of them. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, it puts the budget on a very tenuous footing. So when I say budget, I mean the national budget. And the fiscal framework was only one part of that. So that was approved by one of the standing committees on finance. And even though Action SA seemed to think that the recommendations that it made to things like the VAT, the funding that needs to go to VAT, they want National Treasury to go and relook at this. Even though they thought those recommendations would be binding or would count as amendments, which they don't, we've already seen just today on the 3rd of April how that's raised some of the tension in the room of some of these potential new GNU voting bloc, assuming, let's say for the purpose of the conversation, the DA leaves and Action SA comes in. It's by no means guaranteed that within the next 30 days, which is what has been set for National Treasury to go and look at these different aspects that Action SA once examined, that they're going to come back with recommendations or amendments to the fiscal framework that are palatable to Action SA. And the biggest of which, because of the budget that that Finance Minister Gordon Gwana tabled, that includes a 0.5 percentage point VAT increase on the 1st of May. If you wanted that changed, you should have brought an amendment to the fiscal framework and to the budget, not a recommendation to National Treasury and to one of these finance committees. So it's the next 30 days, I think the next 7 days are going to expose yet more tensions in that regard between potentially closer voting parties than had been the case before. And for a party like the ANC, that could expose it to then having to run a minority government on its own and bringing each issue, each budget to the National Assembly on a case-by-case basis. In turn, that then exposes someone like President Ramaphosa to a vote of no confidence, which could be then brought and perhaps different parties then decide to vote together on that. So it's a victory, I guess, for that voting bloc now in the last 24 hours, but there are deep cracks as to whether it's actually going to cohere going forward. And because budgets are I mean, it's one thing to sign legislation and bills, right? It's one thing to say you're signing the Expropriation Act and the NHI. Your budget allocations is where the government shows its priorities and where it gives funding for things to actually be implemented. If that doesn't function, what that says to the ANC and about the ANC leadership is a big concern for it going forward. I think the leadership, and especially President Ramaphosa, find themselves in a much weakened position now than they did 24 hours ago, even though it looks like they've now passed a budget.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. So let's deal with the ANC and the action very separately quite quickly. The first is Action SA appears to sort of, I've just read through their press release now about all of this, about why they supported the bill. And now they're sort of saying once again that they don't support the VAT increase. So Action SA has gone from saying they don't support the VAT increase and they've just managed to get the ANC to not pass VAT, then realizing that they had actually voted for the VAT increase, as you say, and just put recommendations on, that then tried to say that they had done this to protect South Africa's sovereignty and from the DA's terrorism. Now they seem to be saying something along the lines of they're engaged in constructive criticism, they are opposed to VAT, and that they were tricked into into voting for this. So, Chris, have we ever seen a more bizarre spectacle?
I'm sure we have. I mean, we're talking about South African politics here, right? Throughout the whole history of South African politics, never mind the last 30 years of this particular parliament or the seven administrations with which we have been blessed, if I can put it very, very diplomatically, at least blessed in terms of entertainment, not perhaps in terms of skill and anything of that sort on average. But I think after last year's elections, one could make an argument that their maneuvering in Tswane, for example, when they got the mayorship, etc., they could have set themselves up well, right? You lose support, but you still manage in a way to get that position in one of the biggest metros in the most economically important province in the country. Yeah, yeah. So from a profile point of view and a PR, people talking about you, and now you've got a chance to try and deliver in terms of service delivery and show that you can govern better than some of the other parties that you've criticized. But on the other hand, now that what you've done with the budget, and just for the average citizen and voter, how difficult it is then for you as the party to cohere your message, where you've got limited opportunities before the next local government elections next year in 2026. You might have squandered some of that momentum that you had been building, at least some amongst your core voters, and then eating into other parties like the DA, Razem Zanzi, Bosa, some others who would generally fish in the same sort of pool. So I think a lot of it is it's tactics over strategy. It's very short-termist. It's trying to identify opportunities. Perhaps I'll be proven wrong in 6 months' time or a year's time, but I just think given that you've got such a small base and you need to increase your relationships and your purchase across metros, across committees, in parliament and elsewhere, if you engage in this manner, it's going to be very difficult for you to be part of any sort of governing coalition going forward. Perhaps that's not the goal. Perhaps that's not the intention. But I just don't know about long-term strategy here for Action SA.
I will say it perhaps a bit more. Bit less charitably, I think that Action SA has just driven their political car into a brick wall. Let's talk about the ANC. As you say, Ramaphosa, just like if the party forms a coalition with the EFF or MK, then his position is going to be weakened. He was keen on the whole GNU. He thought that the DA could sort of be subsumed within the ANC's fold, and he probably felt quite good about that after the ANC managed to roll the DA in a number of early battles. But now the whole thing has gone up in smoke, and probably along with it, a lot of his credibility. The GNU as a concept remains relatively popular with South Africans. And I think he is in a difficult position, as you say. But more so than that, the ANC itself is in a difficult position. I think its popularity was being boosted by being part of the GNU, the idea that it was moving forward with solutions and hearing out different opinions and working with the DA, who have this good reputation to build things. That's all gone up in smoke now. And the ANC is also apparently running out of money, not able to pay bills. This is just where it was a few years ago before it managed to scrape together money to fight the last election campaign. then we look at what it did during the negotiations on the budget, and it changed its mind every 5 minutes. It would say to the DA, okay, yeah, we know we agree to these demands here. We're almost ready to sign a deal. Then they would say, actually, no, no deal, nothing. You have to vote for the budget also out of the GNU. And that kind of back and forth, that sort of almost, you know, multiple personality disorder, ANC suggests, an organization in critical crisis.
And suggests an organization where there aren't one or two leaders of the stature that they had beforehand in the party to really keep these different factions together. I'm not saying different factions in terms of ideology, but just how they think the party should be run, whether they should be in the GNU or not, should they partner with parties like the MK and EFF or not, or form a minority government on their own. So despite the short-term budget victory, I think this does expose President Ramaphosa and the core leadership of the party, because you can't get through a budget, you can't get agreement with your biggest coalition partner, and now you're still saying you should be in charge of the party. So there are longer-term trends at play here, I think, especially towards 2027 and the next ANC leadership conference. If, for example, this leads to the complete breakup of the GNU, President Ramaphosa is especially exposed to a motion of no confidence that can be brought against him by Parliament. So then talk about your protections as a party. You could see the party fall off the cliff in terms of electoral support and just the organization very, very quickly. Like, the trajectory has been more long-term decline, but it could accelerate very quickly. If you look at the latest polling by the Social Research Foundation, I think conducted in February, where the ANC polled at 32% with a 4% margin of error. So it could be as low as 28% or as high as 36%. I mean, below 30% from 57% in 2019, that's due to your own decisions, right? That's due to your own things like, are you, you're not communicating your values well. You're not getting that connection with your voters that you had beforehand. Your credibility has been lost. And just your basic party operations aren't there anymore. And this sort of thing, what we've seen in the budget the last few days, like, I don't want to reduce everything to just internal ANC politics, but a lot of what we've seen, I think, and I underestimated just how much that tension and friction between some of the factions is still present. Because a week ago, I would have said the GNU, especially the ANC and the DA, will come to some sort of agreement. But I underestimated the maneuvering already fervently underway for 2027 in that leadership race and what that means with different players undermining each other in that regard.
I think the ANC is going to be utterly, utterly consumed with its internal battle now until its elective conference, which means that it's probably also going to be turning that wheel towards the brick wall that Action SA is driven into. We'll see. You know, the ANC has a lot of meat in it, and one shouldn't count it out easily, but it's not looking great for them. Okay, let's move on to talking about KZN. There's now speculation that KZN's provincial government could fall apart and change if the GNU falls apart. If indeed the DA leaves, will the ANC be willing to make a deal with MK in KZN? Or will it try and hold on with the IFP as some kind of very weak minority government in KZN? Now, I am a little bit skeptical that the DA will dump the ANC in KZN. I think the DA is probably, due to its own internal political reasons, probably not keen on trashing that government, even though it is a minor player in that provincial government, you know, being the third party in it. And I also think the DA is very wary of being seen to hand the province over to MK. But that doesn't stop the ANC from making that deal itself. But one sort of, I think, has to focus a little bit on the IFP here. The IFP voted for the budget. The IFP has basically kind of, you know, not managed to define itself as a alternative voice in the GNU. It's pretty much, for the most part, gone along with the ANC in most decision making. When it's come to disputes, their response has usually been to everyone to, we must just calm down, we must all have a talk, like kind of empty platitudes. And I think the IFP is actually going to probably be hurt by this just as much as everyone else. In fact, I really wonder whether they should have thrown their lot in with the DA and made their voice heard within the GNU, because now I think they're in danger of losing their great prize, which is the premiership of KZN. What's your thoughts on this, Chris?
I go along with quite a bit of that. I think my major caveat would be that, as with all provinces in the country, provincial and internal dynamics in KZN are obviously different than national dynamics. So you've seen in the KZN provincial government, the DA and IFP especially working well together, where the DA has the finance MEC position, and I think they've done quite well in that regard. You've seen more reporting on the ground of businesses in the city of Itequini that city or that metro government has also been performing well in terms of service delivery, supported by the province. So it does boost maybe the incentive for especially the DA and the IFP to work together. I mean, MK on its own has 37 seats in the provincial legislature in KZN. The others together, all of them, all the very many in KZN, if one of them decides to leave for whatever reason, that then opens up space for a party like the EFF, for example, even though they only have two in the provincial legislature, to use that effectively and get into some sort of agreement with the MK party. So that just from a survival point of view, maybe the incentives are strong enough for the DA and IFP to continue working together in KZN and to resist some of the spillover. And you have seen, it's obviously not the best example or test case or example to follow, the sort of best practice. But the ANC has struggled to impose what it sees as its discipline, the national ANC, on the provincial structures. So for other parties as well, if they try and come down very hard in a way that those provincial structures, the DA and IP respectively, think isn't good for the province and for their interests, maybe then you'll see the national structures backing off a bit. So the trend is in that direction, that sort of provincial government does break up, but there are a few other steps in that regard before we get there.
Yeah. No, points well made. Okay, let's move on to our last story. And as mentioned on yesterday's show, yesterday evening for us, day for America, was what Trump described as Liberation Day, the great day of the tariffing of pretty much everyone, actually. It looks like most of the countries in the world got hit with a variety of tariffs by Donald Trump's administration, including South Africa. Now, it seems like a kind of baseline of about 10% has been imposed on the countries that America wants to tariff the least. But other countries, which the U.S. considers to be more hostile to the U.S. in terms of their own local trade or economic policies or just generally the trade deficit, got hit with much higher tariffs. And South Africa was sort of in the middle. We got hit with one of the higher tariffs, not as high as poor little Lesotho, who export, I think, more than half of their exports to the U.S., and that is in the form of garments, which they make in Lesotho. Lesotho's getting hit with a 50% tariff, so not quite that bad. South Africa got hit with a 30% tariff. Now, there are caveats, big caveats. The largest, the bulk of the things we sell to the Americans that would potentially be tariffed, I believe, are precious metals, things like platinum. We sell manganese, chrome, various other copper, zinc, gold, certain chemicals, stuff like that. Even though those are actually the biggest part of our exports to the US, they are not going to be tariffed, as well as coal. I don't think coal is being tariffed. So that actually means that these tariffs are far less extensive than first feared. We are getting hit with our next sort of biggest export after all of these ores and minerals and things is vehicles. We make quite a lot of vehicles for the US. Those are being hit with a 25% tariff. So not the 30% tariff, but still pretty bad. That's going to make them more expensive for American consumers and potentially price them out of the market. And then we've also got agricultural products. Well, about 4%, according to News 24, of agricultural products in South Africa are sold to the US. So, Chris, what do you make of this? How is this going to impact us economically?
So from an analysis point of view, this might be a bit reductionist, but this could go one of two directions. So number one, it leads to a global tariff war, sort of tit for tat tariff exchange as countries also try and impose higher tariffs on the US. That doesn't mean that they'll be successful. The US, obviously, the economic global superpower and retains so much weight just for in terms of market and consumer sentiment so that countries try and export there no matter what. So it could lead in that direction, which over time would be especially negative for the global economy, for global growth, and for emerging markets specifically. Or on the other hand, this could lead a wave of trade liberalization where countries try and lower their own tariffs on US exports, which in turn incentivizes the US to lower their universal or other tariffs in kind. So I know that is a bit reductionist, but it's trying to make sense of where we could go in two major directions. For South Africa specifically, I think this is the sort of rainy day that we should have been planning for and saving for, right? To to make sure that your trade linkages are well established enough and diversified enough that you aren't overly concentrated, and where you are overly concentrated, that you deal with it if higher tariffs are imposed. So not hoping for the best case scenario, more but planning for the worst case. I've seen Minister Park Tsang, bodies like NAMSA and others in the last week or two, they've said, you know, they're very concerned about these tariffs. They're going to go to Washington and try and talk to the administration, etc. Fine, but you should have been talking and laying the groundwork a lot longer beforehand, because President Trump, it's not like he only talked about tariffs now or in his first term. This has been a very, very long time coming for him and his economic advisors. They see any U.S. trade deficit with another country as a fundamentally bad thing. They're trying to reorder global trade that they think would be to the U.S.'s benefit. Whether you think it's going to work out or not is irrelevant. That's what they're doing. So you need to deal with reality. So I think the immediate short-term impact for South Africa, just in terms of a sentiment point of view, is negative. This is also driving Rand weakness against the dollar. When you couple that with what happened with the budget, it's obviously an issue. But I should also add, and the executive order that was signed yesterday on the 2nd of April, part of that included exemptions on certain imports into the US. So, for example, you've got articles subject to one particular piece of legislation, steel or aluminium articles and autos and auto parts, which are already subject to Section 232 tariffs. Those are exempt from this universal tariff. So that doesn't mean there's no tariff. It doesn't mean that it's just duty-free access like under a AGOA. But they could be less intense than we at first feared for sectors like automotive, mining, and manufacturing. I think agriculture is going to be very exposed here. South Africa is the second biggest exporter of citrus, biggest exporter of macadamia nuts, and our wine exports are very popular in the US. So if you go from 0% to 30% or 31%, that does massive damage to your margins and obviously for job creation and investment long term. So it's very complicated to try and figure out, never mind having to run a business in this environment. But it's going to require some quite adept maneuvering and thinking, I think, at this point in time. That's also part of the strategy on the part of the US administration. They want to come in at the 30% mark, which a lot of it is indicated as lower than what other countries impose on the US. So from a narrative and perception point of view, they're saying a country like South Africa puts 60% tariffs on US imports. We're only going to put 30% on South Africa. So from a narrative point of view, they're trying to see how countries come and negotiate with them and how they deal with it.
And the sort of the implication there is that we could raise it higher.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, we shall have to see how that all shakes out. But more complicated than the headline numbers would suggest. But anyway, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. That we are out of time for today. We hope you found this show interesting. We've gone quite long, and we shall see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. Have a great day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.